Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music. A Standard and an Oldie, I'll Close My Eyes, written by Billy Reed and Buddy Kay, and performed here by our guest today, tenor saxophonist Larry McKenna. Writing an intro for Philly native Larry McKenna is like gilding the lily. Ranked among the finest jazz tenor sax players, he has a reputation that has preceded him, partnering with artists that reads like a who's who. Woody Herman, Clark Terry, Buddy DeFranco, Tony Bennett, Rosemary Clooney, Frank Sinatra, and on and on. Teacher and composer, master of bebop and modern jazz styles, influential educator, composer, and arranger, he has assured his status in the world of jazz. And he's our guest today on Crossover. Welcome, Larry McKenna.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Larry, you are... I don't like to use the word icon because it makes one feel like they've been around for a long time. But you are, and you're probably one of the most sought-after tenor sax players.
I hope so. Yeah, I'd like to think that the phone's still ringing, let's put it that way. So,
well, you've done some of all through your life, appearing everywhere with major ensembles, as we say, and on television, I guess, and in clubs and so on. So tell us a little bit about
yourself.
Well,
if you want to go back to the very beginning, I had dabbled, like, when I was about 10 or something, I wanted to play the guitar. This was before the Beatles and all that, so I actually had heard a jazz guitarist on TV, Tony Mottola.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. And I at the time, I guess I didn't know that he was playing jazz, but I knew that that was the kind of music I liked, you know. And I thought, oh, I'm going to take guitar lessons, and which I did. But it turned out the teacher that I had was, he was actually teaching me to be a classical guitarist,
and I wasn't really different
and very difficult too. And I was only, like I say, 10, maybe 11 years old, and I didn't really understand. I thought at some point, I thought, you know, why did I start doing this? This doesn't seem to have any kind of relationship to what I had heard.
Well, that's very adult of you. I mean, at that age, to know that it wasn't the same.
I don't know.
It resulted
in my quitting, you know. So I didn't feel too adult about that. But I mean, a few years later, then I heard jazz through my brother, and I've told this story many times, but he had brought home some recordings of from the jazz at the Philharmonic, and it had Hank Jones and Ray Brown and Howard McGee.
Those were the big ones. Yeah.
And the main thing that I was attracted to was the saxophone. I had two saxophone players, which were Illinois Jacquet and Flip Phillips. They immediately became my idols. You know, that's the instrument that I want to play, and this is the kind of music that I want to play.
And this was, how old were you?
I was about 14 by that time. So I asked my mother if I could play the saxophone, and she said, well, you know, you already gave up one instrument, the way we worked it out was that I went into the school band. The school said that if you wanted to join the band, they would give you an instrument to play, you know. And
it makes me laugh because I remember when my son came home with the saxophone.
Oh.
And he said, I want to play this. I said, I don't think you do. And he didn't.
Oh, he didn't.
But he loved the way the instrument looked. It was,
oh,
I remember
yeah.
he came home with that. But you did. You loved
well,
it.
Well, yeah. Well, when I got in the band, they gave me a clarinet. They didn't have any saxophones left. And we kind of worked out a deal with my mother that if I was still playing the clarinet a year later, then they would buy me a saxophone.
Mouthpiece is very similar. Isn't
it's similar, and I never really became a good clarinet player, but it did.
You did all right on the sax.
Yeah. So once I got after a year of being in the band. My parents bought me a saxophone, and then I really went at it full steam, and I never stopped playing then.
We all know that one, that old Black Magic, Johnny Mercer and Harold Arlen's tremendous hit on the newest album of Larry McKenna, From All Sides. Larry is playing with some marvelous musicians on this. Joe McDonough on trombone, Joshua Richmond piano, Kevin McConnell bass, Pete Smyser guitar, and Dan Monahan drums. For our classical audience, of course, there's sax used. I think Ravel used saxophone
yeah.
in some of his, because that was considered really rather breakthrough.
Right.
I think there are some classical saxophone concertos, I think.
Well, yeah, I played with the Philadelphia Orchestra two Christmases ago. They did Duke Ellington's version of the Nutcracker Suite.
Oh, that's great.
And
yes.
There were solos in there for alto and tenor saxophone, and they asked me to do it. I did it three nights in a row.
How did that feel?
I mean, it was great. Yeah. It was,
But you have to follow a conductor there, right?
I did, but it was pretty much in tempo. The orchestra played the original versions in the first half, and then they played the Ellington version.
That was great.
And then I had to stand up and play the solo, so it was good. It was exciting.
Well, another question I have is, again, how do you learn jazz? I mean, that's a question that is asked, you know. I mean, jazz is music. Jazz is improvisation. I mean, you have to study it as well, don't you?
Well, yeah. Well, now there are so many places where you can study it. You know, at Temple University, they have a great jazz faculty. And, I mean, they're all friends of mine, too. I'm not just saying that because they are. But
and they're all great.
But they are really great. You know, Terrell Stafford, he runs that show. And they're terrific, you know. And there's so much has been done over the last 50 years or so with jazz education. And there's a ton of books, and people go to colleges to give lectures in high schools too, and clinics and stuff like that. When I first started coming up, there wasn't too much of that. You pretty much learned it from going out and playing with people, you know, and if they were nice enough, the ones who were better than you at the time would share some information. And they didn't always do that. There's a lot of people had the attitude like, well, I had to learn it the hard way, so you should go through the same
Well, I guess, and what was the hard way, really? I mean,
the hard way was just going out, like, and you'd sit in at a jam session or something, and if you made mistakes, and you'd feel like a fool. But that was, you know, if you had enough of the true grit, like, you would come back again and do it again until you didn't make a fool of yourself.
Well, now, improvisation, for instance, I mean, I think years ago, for people that didn't know the business, they would say, well, you know, they just play, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, you have to know music. You have to know notes, I guess, to some degree.
Yeah. Well, the way I started out, I had a good ear. I don't have perfect pitch, but I had good relative pitch. And I was able to reproduce on the saxophone what I heard, most of what I heard. I found out that if I could hum it to myself in my head, I could play it on the saxophone. My fingers would just find the notes. So in the beginning, what I did was I would listen to my jazz records, and I would copy what I heard the people playing on there. And I didn't really know what I was doing. And if it wasn't really too extremely difficult, I was able to steal some of the stuff that I heard. And also, I found that I had a certain amount of imagination that I was able to make up some of my own stuff.
So that's the improv part.
But the first year that I played, I didn't have any instruction. So I finally got a teacher. And I was very lucky to get a teacher. His name was Tony Bennett. And it wasn't the Tony Bennett that we know, but they shared the same name. Anthony Benedetto. And he was a guy from Northeast Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and he played saxophone, accordion, and guitar, and he gave lessons, and I went to him, and he gave me very good advice. He said one of the things you have to do is you have to learn chords, and I said, you know, how can you play chords on a saxophone? And he said, no, it's not like you would play them on a guitar. You arpeggiate them, and I won't go into the entire. All the details, but eventually I learned that what I was playing by ear was based on chords and scales. So when he made me learn, I mean, that was part of my lesson. I had to learn harmony. And then I was able to put the two things together, like what I heard and what he was showing me as far as, oh, this is based on this particular chord, and you can do this with it, and you can do that, and so on and so forth. I'm not going to get.
Well, you took the long way around, I guess.
Yeah, but right away I got the picture, and I thought, oh, okay, I see what this is. And then I started to teach myself how to play all that stuff on the piano, with the incorrect fingering and all. And I would just say, okay, this is a C seventh chord. Yeah. It has an E and a G and a B flat, and I find the stuff on my own. And that helped me tremendously, learning the keyboard, because I was able, it really helped to develop my ears.
But then there's, of course, the whole thing of performing on the instrument and the quality of sound. You have a gorgeous sound. And I mean, of course, you've been playing for many years. But for instance, now, if you have students that come in mm-hmm. to the jazz program here at Temple and they want to study sax with you, I mean, what level are they at where? In other words, do they play the instrument already?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I no longer teach at Temple. I did for years, but I haven't been there for a number of years. But when they get to Temple or any other university, they've been playing for at least, I would say, in most cases, they've been playing for at least 4 or 5 years. In some cases, maybe 10 years. So they have a certain amount of development technically already under their belt. So otherwise they wouldn't be able to get into the program. They have to audition.
Well, technically, yes. But I mean, there's playing the instrument, then there's the jazz aspect.
The conception of it. That's another thing too. I've had some students over the years who were classically trained and then they get into jazz. And some of them take to it immediately. You know, there was one guy who was a student at Westchester when I used to teach there. He wasn't a saxophone player, but he was a classical pianist. And he took my class, of improv class, and he got into it right away, and he started going out and buying all the recordings and everything, and he just became, and he never abandoned the classical music, but he became adept at both of them, you know. But he just had, you know, I think that it has to do with the love of it, you know. Yeah. You can't just say, like, well, everybody's playing, all the other students are playing jazz, so I think I'll do it too. You know, you have to really.
It goes beyond.
Yeah, it goes beyond that. Yeah. And as far as, like, the sound and all that you're talking about.
Well, that again is technique, I think, isn't it?
It is, but it's the sound to me, the way I learned it, was always what I heard in my head. And I listened to all the great masters of the saxophone, so, and I used to try to imitate them, mm-hmm. you know. And I used to have a pretty good knack for imitating voices and stuff.
Yeah, good
not,
ear.
Not,
right?
not like Rich Little or anything like that, but I mean to a certain degree. And I found that I could do it on the saxophone too. So if I listened to Stan Getz, for instance, mm-hmm. I was able to imitate the sound that he got. So the thing is, if you're doing that, if you're listening to the right people, and if you're able to duplicate what they're doing sound-wise, then you're doing something physically correct, even though you might not know what it is that you're doing. But the way it came to me is I would hear the sound in my head and then just keep, you know, tooling away until I was able to focus in on, oh, yeah,
exactly,
that's what it sounds like.
Doing, yeah, yeah.
This is how you call on that particular sound.
From his album Profile, we heard Larry McKenna, tenor sax, performing Cole Porter's You'd Be So Nice to Come Home To, Tom Lawton on piano, Kevin McConnell bass, and Dan Monahan drums. So I guess what I'm really saying is we have Berklee now. They teach jazz there. I mean, it's a conservatory basically for jazz. But the whole jazz idiom, I mean, is it's not something, it's a language, and you have to learn it. I mean, it's not just some kind of thing that, oh, I feel this, and I understand.
No, right.
And I think that's the difference. People don't understand, well, how do you play jazz? Well, mm-hmm. there's a lot of, I guess, technical stuff in there that you have to be aware of, but then be above and beyond that, it's the feeling, the understanding of the genre too.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, the thing is, when as an improviser, you're basically a composer, but you're doing it spontaneously. You know, you're taking in most cases, you're taking somebody else's song. Like we play all the standard tunes that were written by Gershwin,
sure.
and Rogers, and Jerome Kern, and all that, and we sort of make them our tunes. And so if I play them, they're going to sound different than if somebody else plays them, and you know.
Which brings me to your newest album, and I had a bone to pick with you about it. From All Sides, it's a marvelous album.
Thank you.
And you have one of my favorite songs on there, and you play it up tempo.
Oh.
September song.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. Why?
Okay. I've been getting a little bit more. I've been developing a few guilt feelings about some of this stuff as I get older, because, you know, when I first started to learn this music, I don't think we had any regard for the composers, you know.
Right.
We would play All the Things You Are.
That's okay. That's okay. But there is something, I have to admit, that I've grown with that song. I guess as you get older, you begin to appreciate it, because you really don't understand it when you're young. But it's such a profound song, mm-hmm. and the whole meaning of it. And for some reason, I was thrilled to see it on the album. And I said, why is he playing it that way? I'm going to ask him. And
well,
I
can give you it's a little bit of a technical answer. The chord progressions to that song. I know the story of the song, the lyrics and everything, yeah. and it's a very sad song yeah. about a person who's nearing the end.
The end.
But the first chord of the song, it starts on a four dominant chord, and which suggests the blues.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's known as a blues chord because it's a chord that usually occurs in the fifth measure of the blues.
Right.
But this song starts on it, and when it's da 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 boo do do da, and it creates a bluesy feeling. And I don't think I'm the first person who ever did it this way.
No, you didn't.
But I just always thought, like, if you played it like, and I had Pete Smizer, who was the guitarist, on there, and I said, Pete, would you play a straight quarter note feeling like Freddie Green did with the Count Basie band, where he just goes chunk, 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 chunk. And all through it. And I just like the feel that it created.
That's okay. We've just heard the great September Song, music by Kurt Weill and lyrics by Maxwell Anderson, performed by Larry McKenna and company. Joe McDonough trombone, Joshua Richmond piano, Kevin McConnell bass, Pete Smizer guitar, and Dan Monahan drums. This from his new CD, From All Sides. It has four new songs on it.
Eight new songs.
Eight?
Well, there's four new, vocal songs, which are sung by Joanna Pascal.
Yes.
And there are four instrumental songs that were written by me. Two of them were written years ago, and two of them were new.
Who wrote the one about the cat?
Oh, okay. this is a really personal story. First of all, I never really spent a lot of time as a composing songs up until just the past few years. I mean, over the years, I used to write a lot of what they call bebop heads, more or less like jazz kind of tunes that are mostly instrumental
mm-hmm.
in nature. And then I started to write some actual songs that people can sing. And I never really even explored that part. That's one of the reasons why this album is called From All Sides, because it goes into my compositions and arranging as aside from just my playing, playing saxophone playing. So anyway, this particular tune is called Friends for a While, but I found that people who are referring to it as Chimmy, Chimmy, Chimothy. And what it is my friend Melissa Gilstrap, who also wrote the lyrics. She had a cat who was, I think, a cat was about 16 or 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it was named Chippy. But Melissa always has more than one name for her cat. She'll have like five different names for them. And at this time she was calling the cat Chimmy. What happened was I happened to be down there and I was minding the cats while she was away. And Chippy came walking into the room, And for some reason or another, I heard this tune in my head, and I wrote it in 3/4 time, and Melissa put words to it, and it's called Chimmy Chimmy Chimothy, but there's a line in there that said, I'm so glad we were friends for a while.
Yeah, people come and people go, but your love didn't end. Oh, yeah. that just tore me apart, of course, being a cat lover. Friends for a While, music by Larry McKenna and lyrics by Melissa Gilstrap. We heard Joanna Pascal, vocalist, performing with Joshua Richmond, piano, Joe McDonough, trombone, Kevin McConnell, bass, and Pete Smizer, guitar. What a beautiful song. I mean, the whole idea of honoring an animal that is so close to you and means so much to you, and the whole concept of that. Mm-hmm. And delightful to speak with you, Larry. Are you going to be playing in the area at all?
Well, yeah. I'm playing with Jackie Ryan, wonderful singer from San Francisco area,
yes,
at Chris's.
Great.
And also with another vocalist, Susie Meisner. I'm going to be at Chris's. And then I'm going to, September, I'm going to Ireland at the end of September with Tony Maselli, a great vibes player.
Wonderful.
And we're going to play at the Limerick Jazz Festival in Ireland. Yeah.
Is that the first time?
First time, yeah.
How is jazz doing in Ireland?
I have no idea. But Tony says it's good. He's been over there a number of times, and he talked them into bringing me over. He's been trying to get them to bring me over there, and they were sort of like, so, oh yeah, okay, sometime, and that never happened. One of the guys who from Ireland came over this past winter, and he got to hear me play here, so then that sold him on bringing me over. Yeah,
well, that's terrific. So you'll have to come back and tell us all about Ireland.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah.
Will you?
Yes, I will.
All right, all right. Pleasure.
Thank you so much, Jill.
A pleasure
thank
speaking
you.
With you, Larry McKenna.
Thank you.
For a second listen to selected crossover interviews, visit WRTI.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Hattie, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group, Incorporated. Thanks for listening.